One Nation.
Africa Live.
Welcome to Solidarity Not Charity, the weekly program of the African People's Solidarity Committee. As always, we want to thank the African People's Socialist Party and give our greatest respect and profound appreciation for the leadership of Chairman Omali Yeshitela and the African People's Socialist Party in founding the African People's Solidarity Committee and allowing us, giving us a place in the struggle of the peoples of the world to overturn U.S. imperialism and build a new world where everyone can live in peace and with control of their own resources. And so we do this work in the African People's Solidarity Committee to reach out to other white people like ourselves, organize support from the white community for the African Liberation Movement, for the African People's Socialist Party and the Uhuru Movement. And we do this radio program as a part of that work. So today we are very honored to have in the studio with us Gaida Cambone, who is the National Secretary of the African People's Socialist Party, and we will be speaking with her about her recent trip to Sierra Leone for the founding of the African People's Socialist Party there. And we're looking forward to that. But before we bring on Comrade Gaida, we are going to speak briefly with Wendy Snyder, who is the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee in Oakland, California, about the recent police murder in Oakland. And there's been a lot of activity there since another young African was killed at the beginning of December. Of course, this last Friday, January 1st, was the one-year anniversary of the brutal point-blank murder of Oscar Grant by BART police, which is the Bay Area Rapid Transit Police in the San Francisco Bay Area. And everybody saw the murder of Oscar Grant on YouTube and all over the news. And once again, we're seeing a very well-known and publicized killing of a young African, 18-year-old African, Kenneth Ross. So we're happy to have Comrade Wendy Snyder with us from Oakland to talk about what's happening out there. Uhuru, Wendy.
Uhuru, Sandy. And uhuru, Gaida Cambone. I just really appreciate the opportunity to be on the program here, Solidarity Not Charity, and I'm looking forward to hearing about Sierra Leone from Gaida Cambone. And just to say that actually the shooting of 18-year-old African Kenneth Ross on December 3rd was something that only was given one article in the newspaper, and it's not something that is very well known yet to the entire Bay Area and the world, and it should be. And the thing is that this is following, you know, like you said, the year started off, 2009 started off with the brutal point-blank range killing of Oscar Grant, and people did see that all over, you know, replayed over and over, and that was a brutal killing. And what we saw happen on December 3rd in East Oakland was a group of young Africans were at an apartment building in East Oakland. If people know the area, it was around 64th Avenue. And the police came out in full force and chased these young Africans out of the apartment building and shot Kenneth Ross multiple times, we don't even know how many times, in the back, shot another young African in the buttocks who survived, but Kenneth Ross did not. And in fact, the media, as they always do, worked hand-in-hand with the state to once again criminalize this young African and make it appear that his life was not worth anything because he, they said he was associated with a gang, which is, as we know, a code word for the dehumanization and criminalization of African people. And the other thing that happened was that Gloria Mulder, his mother, waited on the scene for 5 hours in the presence of the new police chief, who is an African man, a neo-colonial police chief who's been brought in, Anthony Batts, was on the scene and never went to tell this mother what had happened to her son. She was not given access to him at all that evening. Mm. So yeah, in PDEM, the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement in Oakland, contacted the family, and the family and friends of Kenneth Ross came out. There were probably about 40 people, mostly family and friends of Kenneth Ross, who participated in a demonstration at the Oakland Police Station on December 18th to demand justice for this brutal murder.
Wow. So what kind of response has been, have you seen there from the African as well from the North American community? I mean, was Kenneth Ross well known? Was he from Oakland?
Yes, he actually was just, I think, 6 months away from graduating from Oakland High, which is one of the major high schools in Oakland. And he actually was part of a hip-hop, a rap group called 211, which is the police code for burglary, if I'm not mistaken. But the media used that to say he was part of a gang, when in fact he was part of a hip-hop group that was performed frequently at this center called Youth Uprising, which is sort of a state-sponsored community center, anyway, in East Oakland. And so he had a numerous friends and people within that community who loved him, who are, you know, paying tribute to him in videos on YouTube. And so I think that this is something that is going to really grow in terms of people understanding that this type of brutal murder happens to African people everywhere, and that we actually, from the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, have put out a statement. You can read it on uhurusolidarity.blogspot.com around the whole series of Oakland police killings that happened within the past couple of years. And these are just the situations that we've learned about, you know, and there's many other instances of police violence and police brutality, which, you know, we're really struggling that people understand it as the Uhuru Movement characterizes it, which is a policy of colonial terror and police containment of the African community. And it's not something that is going to be resolved with any, you know, change in department policies or firing of this or that cop, although those things can happen, but, you know, we understand it as a counterinsurgency war in the African community. And we do see a response from North Americans. We attended a cultural gathering for to commemorate Oscar Grant, and we did meet numerous people who, you know, are looking for a deeper analysis, something that they can really see, you know, that this is, it's going to take much more than protest. It's going to take getting behind the leadership of the African community struggle for justice and control of their land and resources. So, you know, that's what we're looking at and coming into the new year with this new police chief in Oakland who has determined that he's going to carry out a war on guns, drugs, and gangs. And it's just bringing back the old code words from, you know, the previous decades around the war on the African community.
Well, for our listeners who are located throughout the U.S. and in fact, throughout the world, what can people do to support or to support the demand for justice for Kenneth Ross and an end to this policy of police containment?
So people who are here locally in Oakland and the Bay Area can come to our Uhuru Solidarity Movement meeting, which is Tuesday, January 5th from 7 to 9 at the Nibel Proctor Marxist Library, which is 6501 Telegraph Avenue in Oakland. You can contact us at 625-1106, area code 510. Email is oakland@uhurusolidarity.org. You can also attend the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement weekly meetings that are every Thursday at the Uhuru House at 6:30, and that's at 7911 MacArthur Boulevard in Oakland. And I do think that we'll, on the Uhuru Solidarity blog, uhurusolidarity.blogspot.com, we will have information about what people can do in terms of a call-in, letter writing, you know, ways that you can publicize this, because people should know the name of Kenneth Ross just as they know the name of Oscar Grant, just as they should know the name of all the victims of police terror and containment of the African community. So those are a couple of the ways.
Absolutely. So for listeners who want to follow the situation there in Oakland, it's very dynamic and a very important front of the growing African liberation struggle around throughout the U.S. as well as of the solidarity movement taking a stand in solidarity from the white community with the demands of the African community. Definitely follow uhurusolidarity.blogspot for regular updates and how you can participate. Thank you, Wendy, for joining us, and Uhuru.
Yeah, Uhuru, and I look forward to the national conference next week in St. Petersburg, Florida, of the African People's Solidarity Committee.
Yeah, I'm going to tell a little bit more about that later, but we look forward to seeing you out here in St. Pete and invite anyone who's interested in taking a stand in solidarity with the African Liberation Movement, the growing anti-imperialist movement around the world. Come to the African People's Solidarity Committee Conference January 10th through the 12th. In St. Petersburg, Florida, and you can find out more information on our website, apscuhuru.org. Thank you, Wendy.
All right, thank you, Uhuru.
Uhuru. Uhuru, so that was Wendy Snyder we are just talking with, from who is the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee in Oakland, California. My name is Sandy Thompson, and now on next on Uhuru Solidarity Not Charity, we're really pleased to have in the studio with us a special guest, Gaida Cambone, who is the National Secretary of the African People's Socialist Party. You won't need those unless we get a caller. You won't need to wear those headphones. Let me see if your mic is up. Uhuru Gaida.
Uhuru Sandy, it's good to be here in this discussion.
It's great to have you, and really exciting to talk. We've been talking, the African People's Socialist Party has held an event here in St. Petersburg, kind of summing up what's happening on the continent of Africa and with the recent trip to Sierra Leone. And the party is also doing an online fundraiser that we want to really encourage people to go to uhururadio.com or uhurunews.com, click on the donate link to support the party's ongoing work in Africa. And we're really honored to be able to talk with you about it because you've made numerous trips to Africa, and as well as having a extensive history of leading political struggles and campaigns throughout the U.S., and it's always great to get your perspective on what's happening in the world. So you were recently in Sierra Leone, West Africa. You were part of the process of building the African People's Socialist Party there. Of course, the party there is led by Cherno Alpha Mba, who has toured the U.S., sponsored by the Uhuru Movement in 2006 and 2008. So some of our listeners may have heard him speak before, and he's a phenomenal organizer and leader of the African Socialist International on the continent. So can you tell us about what is the significance of the founding of the party in West Africa? This is the first time the party's been on the ground in Africa formally.
Yes, yes. It's the first time a workers' party has been on the ground in the history of the continent, you know, on the ground there. So this has got tremendous implication. Just a little bit about Sierra Leone. You know, Sierra Leone is this beautiful West African country. It's in the west of Africa, right on the coast, and it's minerally rich. You know, it's got some of the best and largest diamonds and other gems, gold and things like bauxite and iron ore, and you know, all of these things, you know, are found. And even now, I'm here. I'm talking about the possibility of oil. You know, so it's really minerally rich. Beautiful, lush country. I think in the past, before the Civil War, you know, in the 90s, it was understood, it was called a gem of West Africa. Mm. You know, it was a place where, you know, a lot of white people out of Europe went for the pristine beaches, you know, that kind of thing, you know. So it had that kind of history. In fact, I had read somewhere where, you know, even in you know, way back, you know, in the days of the explorations, that was the watering hole that a lot of these explorers, you know, which we know today were colonizers and conquerors, etc., you know, where they went to get clean water. They stopped in Sierra Leone because it was known for the pristine water.
Wow.
And the cleanest water, and that paralleled the kind of water that is there today, you know, as a consequence of their conquest and intervention. But, you know, most of these things that I talked about are controlled by foreign interests, you know. So on the one hand, you have this place that is sitting, literally sitting on wealth and riches. And then to parallel that, you have what the UN called the poorest nation, you know, in the world. You know, you have the highest incidence of maternal and infant mortality on the planet existing in Sierra Leone, you know. And these things are, you know, coming from simple lack of nutrition and medical availability of medicine and medical supply. These are preventable deaths that we're talking about, you know, that come as a consequence of this intervention, of this exploitation, this real brutal kind of exploitation that happens in Sierra Leone. In Sierra Leone, the lifespan is 37 years. That's, you know, the lifespan of men, 37 years. So when you're in your 30s, you're already an old man and looking forward to, you know, not looking forward, but the expectation is that you won't last very long, much longer than that. There's an absence of electricity, absence of running water, you know, it's malaria ridden. People talk about malaria in the country, which is striking, you know, when somebody is not feeling well, somebody else will say to them, is this your malaria acting up? As if it's a given that you will have malaria. If you live in Sierra Leone, not only, you know, men, but, you know, women, even children, newborn babies. So this is the kind of scenario that you have in the place of Sierra Leone. So, yeah, you know, it is a tremendous, it represents a tremendous kind of a phenomena for the party, the African People's Socialist Party, to be in there because, you know, it with us being in there, it's kind of represents the realization of our great heroes, like, you know, Marcus Garvey, who understood that in order to change this condition. And I'm saying Sierra Leone, but if you travel throughout Africa and even beyond Africa, wherever African people live, you'll find similar conditions. On the continent, you might find, you will find the absence of electricity and running water. But when you come out even in the imperialist world, countries where African live and in sectors of the community, we have the highest death rate, the highest infant mortality rate, the same thing, similar situation. So that, Kwame, people like Marcus Garvey and Kwame Nkrumah, who was the most progressive president of Ghana, recognized that in order to change the plight of African people everywhere, that we had to begin to unify Africa. We had to come out from a perspective of a one Africa, one nation, 1.5 billion strong, uniting the people back together to transform the situation, to seize our resources, to be able to control our resources, and to be able to transform the situation. Not any amount of charity or send me 50 cents so that we can feed this child. That none of that is going to change Africa. None of the NGOs is going to be as a consequence of African people coming back together, with the mission of liberating Africa. So that's what it represents for the party, who has taken on for itself the mission of uniting, the unification of Africa, uniting African people and the transformation of Africa, the seizure of our resources to begin to transform, the continent. And so that's what it meant, for the party to be now penetrating, into Africa, and into Sierra Leone, which is really, really interesting. Sierra Leone being a place of where you have 90% of the population young people. It's a young, country, a country where a vision of the future is what people are looking for, because the youth always try to solve the problems of the future. And here you have a young country, 10%, that is, made up of, these, the what we call the neocolonialists, and probably we'll talk about that a little bit, that is in control, and not only in Sierra Leone, but all over Africa. This is the kind of situation you find. So here you have this young country with people desiring to transform this contradiction, to transform this situation, to look towards the future. The stakes are in the future, and they have embraced and adapted for themselves the African Socialist International, which is the theory of, our great chairman Amalia Shetela cultivated this, really in grappling with how we could solve this problem, how we can organize African people, begin to put in place a theory of African internationalism and the ASI, the African Socialist International, as a vehicle for people to participate, African workers, not just African people, African workers and poor peasant, to put in place this great organization that we can come into a single organization with a single trajectory of transforming this reality. And so it is now on the continent, it is now in Africa, firmly entrenched in Sierra Leone, and I think it's just the greatest light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, that we can see. So, yeah, I think during the time of the space travel and exploration, they were talking about one great step for mankind, however it goes, one great step for man, one great
small step for man, a great leap for mankind.
Exactly. So now you're looking at truly the great leap for mankind, with this penetration of Africa.
Well, I know the chairman has been talking about the African Socialist International, mm-hmm. the concept of the United Africa, from at least the early 80s, not earlier.
Yes, yes.
And I know, for our listeners, some of those speeches, you can go back in, if you are a subscriber, if you are a paying subscriber, you can go back and listen to Amalia Shetela Speaks and hear some of those early speeches where he's talking about same concept that you're talking about now.
Exactly. It's
so
the only way.
Vision that has been held on to and can, it's amazing to me how it's so profound that the party has been able to keep that continuity from Garvey, from the earliest resistance of African people, and Garvey's call for Africa, for Africans at home and abroad, one united Africa, and now making it into a reality. And I remember, I know you've made several trips to the continent. Well, you were born in Panama, and then you lived much of your life in the U.S.
Yeah.
And then since the party has been going to Africa, you've been going there. And I remember at one point, I don't know if it was from your first trip, coming back from your first trip from Sierra Leone, or if it was from another, but I remember you saying, what we've been struggling for all these years, it's happening.
It's here. It's here. And what a beautiful time for it to be here. You know, we're looking at this real crisis of imperialism, and everybody, you know, all people that's got stakes are people inside this country. And in most of the imperialist centers, you know, running around talking about the stock exchange and the Dow Jones average. And for the colonized people in Africa and other places, for us, we don't see the same kind of dismal reality. What we see is hope, because we see, you know, the end of exploitation, you know, near. The thing that's causing it is not the Dow Jones average and you know, these stocks and all of this other stuff. When, you know, translated, what is causing it is people throughout the world that have come to the conclusion that they have to have their resources for them to be able to live. It's a desperate question for people around the world, where this intense exploitation has been happening for centuries and centuries. These are the colonies, you know, of the Imperial West, now where the people in these colonies have decided that they have to throw off the cloak of colonialism, of neocolonialism, and once again seize their resources so that they would have a future for their children. And so with that, that's what's causing the crisis, you know. And so for people like, you know, oppressed and exploited people, it signals a brighter tomorrow. It signals the end of this, you know, centuries of African people, 500 years or more, mm-hmm. of this kind of brutal extraction, mm-hmm. you know, that have, you know, when all the situations that I talked about, when you looked at the lifespan and, you know, you're talking about the absence of electricity and an infant mortality rate and a maternal mortality rate, where almost like every 3 in 5 African women, you know, have to look towards whenever they're pregnant and getting ready to give birth. It's a question of life and death. They don't even know whether they'll survive. And that's mm-hmm. some brutal statistics. Mm-hmm. You know, people tend to gloss over that kind of thing, but it is a reality. And this has been going on for a very long time. And, you know, you have people now looking at the end of this, because along with the great wealth, the vast wealth that existed in these imperialist center, you know, the connectedness of that, you know, the other side of the coin, the consequence of that is a vast kind of impoverishment and dismal outlook that you see in Africa. There's an interconnectedness. Yeah. It cannot be, and people, you know, are not forced to see it inside of these imperialist centers. They tend to put on these glasses and gaze toward Wall Street, you know, and looking to solve their problems. But, you know, for the colonized people, you know, Africans and other colonized people around the world, it's a whole different reality mm-hmm. that we are embarking on, and we don't share the same kind of pessimism as we see in the centers that are seeing the demise of these resources, you know.
Uhuru, yeah. Uhuru. I mean, I was honored to be a part of the most recent delegation to Sierra Leone in mm-hmm. November, which was my first time to the continent of Africa. Mm-hmm. And it was like the conditions, like you were saying, I mean, it was very shocking. I mean, a million people in the capital city of Freetown and no electrical grid, mm-mm. you know, to see the women washing, you know, cooking their meal every day over the wood fire out back and washing their clothes and hanging up on the line. Mm-hmm. And then in the day, coming out on the street, you know, mm-hmm. holding their head high, mm-hmm. you know, looking beautiful and just struggling mm-hmm. to have a good life, you know. I mean, when sitting in the Congress or the conference, to the founding conference of the African People's Socialist Party, I was struck by, because there was hundreds of people in there, and I was struck by how really attentive and engaged and positive the response was. What was your impression of the response in general throughout the country to the African People's Socialist Party?
I just thought that it was a tremendous response. The thing, you know, that you talked about in terms of the conditions, and I just want to be clear for, you know, our listeners that even as we put out this dismal condition of existence, this is the way it really is. The thing that struck me was the optimism of the people. Everybody was upbeat. You know, people, you know, they didn't have these things, you know, that we take for granted. But there was no pessimism, like, you know, people just waiting to die. There was real evidence of enthusiasm. They embraced the politics. We didn't have the kind of struggles that you have, you know, when you try to put out politics here in this country. You know, you get all these bizarre questions that take you so far away from the reality of the situation.
Oh, you can't change it. They're so powerful.
You didn't have all this stuff about it. What about the white people somewhere? You didn't get that. What you got was people excited and electrified by the fact that, all right now there is a solution.
Yeah.
We're tired of these two parties that we have in this country. We see a real bright future right now. This is great that this is happening. Now we can get engaged. You know, and they were the workers that participated. You know, these were the workers that were tired of their imperialist lackey. They were tired of neocolonialism. You know, they were tired of the Obamas of the world. You know, they understood that the workers now had to, you know, seize control and power, and that they had a real opportunity to do that, you know, in terms of getting organized in the ASI. And, they understood the question of the 1 billion strong One Africa. That was the most profound thing that they understood all over the streets and the places where we were. People were saying, even kids, One Africa, One Nation. They recognized that the borders had to be removed. They recognized they didn't see us as foreigners or African Americans coming from somewhere. They saw us as Africans returning home, one African people, you know, and they understood the implication of One Africa. So I saw it was really invigorating for me, you know, mm-hmm. And it's always been. Every time I went to Sierra Leone, you know, I see the thing that we lost as Africans, you know, that we, you know, our relationship to imperialism and being in the imperialist center, it was a great loss for Africa and African people, because a certain kind of humanity was lost, you know, in this conquest, you know, whereas on the continent, what you see that everybody is moving toward, you know, it's almost like socialism, you know, that is put in place.
It's
just a natural socialism.
Right.
People are looking out for the well-being of each other.
Right.
It's nothing to see, you know, it's not, it's nothing to see two men holding hands or women holding. You don't attack the person that you hold hands with all the time.
Right.
The people, that's their common kind of culture. They hold hands. They eat in collective union, you know, together off the same plate.
Yeah.
So it's a whole kind of humanity. It's a whole kind of socialism, natural socialism,
right,
that is there, you know.
It just makes you so
sad, because of when you look at what, you know, what they've done to Africans in this imperialist center where we've been so alienated from each other and stuff like that. And now you see, you know, even in poverty, that we can't even weather it, and we can really, you know, live, you know, as long as we have each other to be able to support and substantiate each other in a certain kind of way, you know. And I think that's tremendous, you know.
I feel like for us in the white community, you know, it just is further validation that of why the Africans are leading the world struggle to, you know, you see these white socialist groups and, oh, they're going to lead the way to socialism. They don't even know how to live, you know. So,
all these humanitarian causes and stuff like that, you know, when humanity is left out of it.
But
Sierra Leone is, you know, and all over Africa. I went to, I was in Ghana and I saw similar things in Ghana, you know.
Well, can you say some more about what the party's work is going forward in throughout the continent?
Well, like you said, we have begun the penetration, but it's not just limited there, because it's not only to the continent either. You know, that the African Socialist International, this worldwide single organization, you know, of African people everywhere, African workers everywhere, workers and poor peasants coming together on a single trajectory, single organization, single leadership to begin to transform Africa, to return, you know, to reclaim our resources, our birthright, to remove the borders, these artificially imposed borders, to get rid of these borders, to connect Africa, because these borders serve, it serves and it ensures the continued exploitation. It served to facilitate that exploitation, these carved up borders, you know, that was carved up in Europe. And so, you know, the task of the African Socialist International is to remove them, because they stifle Africans and they keep us from our resources, and to unite, you know, unify Africa. So, you know, we are now, in the near future, in a matter of weeks, we'll be in South Africa, you know, with the same trajectory. We've had people in South Africa that have, you know, that have heard the ASI, saw the ASI, understands the ASI, unite with the vision, and want to get the ASI in their area, you know, to put down this organization and link up Africans. And so we're going to be in Azania in South Africa, we already have a radio station there, and there's another one that's going to be in place. Uhuru Radio, similar to this, will be in Sierra Leone shortly, and then from there we're going into Kenya, where the same thing is happening, you know, where there is already an existing group of Africans that are ready and willing. And even since we've been in Sierra Leone, we're getting calls from other Africans in other places saying that when you back on the continent, you have to come to us. We need this. So wow. The workers are recognizing that they have their own organization, and their interest is different from the interests of the, you know, from the colonizers, the explorers, and, you know, from imperialism and the neocolonialists, who acts on their behalf, that there's two opposing, you know, interests, diametrically opposing interests, and the workers have stakes, only have stakes in transforming this reality so that they can, you know, ensure that they would have some kind of, you know, quality of life and resources to make that happen and to stop the hemorrhaging in Africa. So, yeah, you know, like I said, on the continent, these are our immediate places that we'll be going into: Kenya, South Africa. And then, you know, we also are currently working in Canada with the Africans. A lot of Africans from the Caribbean are concentrated in Canada, those that have not been able to come into the U.S. I've been in Canada and coming into the U.S., yeah, and Africans migrating was a way to solve the resource problem. People were following their resources, even when they couldn't articulate that. Mm-hmm. The reason they were clamoring to come to these places is because this is where their resources are extracted and concentrated in these imperialist centers.
Right.
It's concentrated in places like, you know, the U.S. and the U.K., you know, and Canada, and places that don't have any kind of wealth, so to speak, of don't produce anything. They're consumer nations.
Right.
And the reason all this wealth is here is because they exploit, you know, mm-hmm. places like the continent, you know, and other places where the great exploitation happened, to extract these resources, to bring them in these centers, to make these centers a much better place for the people of these imperialist centers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at the expense of the people, you know, in these countries where they come from, you know. So they follow their resources, and they're not able to articulate that I'm coming because this is where my resources is, you know, and, you know, so that I can at least share some of my resources, and that's the reason. So you have in Canada and places like that, you know, a lot of Africans out the Caribbean, and so there is the ASI organization in Canada, and then recently we have the ASI in Colombia, you know, where, you know, there are Africans there in Colombia also that's catching a lot of hell, you know, similar to Africans everywhere, that needs to, you know, get connected to this great mission of, you know, Garvey and Kwame and Nkrumah, now the party taking it forward and carrying it forward, you know, to bring it into fruition.
Uh-huh.
So that, you know, I think that those are some of the areas that we're going to be in right now.
Well, we want to, and we know that so much of that those resources that you spoke of are concentrated largely in the hands of white people. Mm-hmm. And so we really want to call on our listeners from the African People Solidarity Committee to support the fund drive that the party is currently doing to be able to send those organizers into Southern and East Africa in February to consolidate and advance the movement in that area. So people, if you are listening and you tell your friends, you should go to the Uhuru News, Uhuru Radio homepages, and there's a big ad you can click on to donate. The party is raising $10,000 by January 20th to send the organizers into Eastern and South Africa, as Gaida mentioned. And, you know, it's really urgent that African internationalism can sweep the continent right now. And so far, I think it's close to $3,000 has been raised, and we want to really encourage all of our listeners to participate in that fundraiser and make a donation today online. Or you can also send in checks to the Uhuru House to 1245 18th Avenue South, St. Petersburg, Florida, 33705. So what else do we want to talk about?
Well, I always want to say something, because I hear the call to the solidarity, but, you know, I really want to make a widespread call to just you know, white people and people of conscience everywhere to participate in this campaign, because I think this is the only true investment in the future. Your investment is not, you know, watching the stocks go up and down.
Just give up on that.
You know, you should have already come to the conclusion that that is not, that, that the truth has not been told, and that to see how flimsy that thing is, and that that can't be the solution. Mm-hmm. The investment is for, you know, even in today's world when we're talking about, and this one, a lot, there's a lot of question around this recent and latest incident of so-called terrorism, you know, that is out there right now, and thinking people are raising a whole lot of questions around that. But even the advent of, you know, people around the world, because the U.S. is not the world. It's just a little place. In the scheme of things, the world is much larger.
Right.
And people around the world, you know, especially in these countries where these exploitations, heavy exploitation is going on, you know, have only one mission, and that mission is to end it, because it has created so much havoc. It has, you know, it has just really reduced numbers of great populations to almost nothing. You know, there's a saying that when one white child is born in the world anywhere, four African and other colonized children would starve.
Really?
People in Sierra Leone is eating every other day. Mm-hmm. And when you juxtapose that with the gluttony and the kind of excess that exists in this country, you know, the investment is in humanity. It is to say that the thing that has got the planet turned upside down is not the Africans who have been colonized. As a matter of fact, is that the conquest of Africa and other places, you know, where great civilizations exist, the native people, etc., when there was no kind of peril that the ozone layer was being destroyed, or that the planet was being wrecked, or, you know, there was none of that. It wasn't happening during the time when Africans were in power and in charge over their own lives.
Right,
it's
right.
At the behest and at conquest of Africa and all of these other, you know, oppressed colonies and entities, that this thing, this avarice, you know, we saw this gluttony, this exploitation, and this real recklessness in terms of the, you know, how nature and the whole earth that belongs to all the people who live in it. We saw that come into fruition.
Right.
So if you are interested in ending that kind of thing, if you're interested in ending the threat that exists, you know, for white people right now on the planet Earth, because people are associating white people with this conquest, with this kind of excess, and with the extraction, you know, insatiable extraction that they see going on that is laying them to waste. White people are being, you know, are being identified with that. And the only way that you cannot identify with yourself with that is to begin to struggle for justice and for the return of these resources, and for these resources to enable these, you know, the colonized people, the colonies that have bled so profusely, for them to be overturned so that the people can see fairness and justice and have their resources and take them out of these dire situations, you know, so that, you know, everybody on the planet can live. Because that's what, in the final analysis, what, you know, colonized people are fighting for. They're fighting for the ability to live. They have no other interest in anything but the ability to survive on this planet and to live in peace and with justice. You know, so that, you know, when colonized people were in power over their own lives, we didn't have this kind of, you know, warrenness that we see happening now. And, you know, we didn't have that. That didn't come at the hands of colonized people. It came at the hands of the so-called system that's in place right now. And we can continue the hemorrhaging, and we continue to think that bars and all of the stealth bombers and all of that, and it's what has been proved daily, is that that is not working. Mm-hmm. It cannot work. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that can stop a people that is fighting for their freedom and their for liberation. It's nothing. And with that comes, you know, justice in the world, and the world will be turned right side up. So if you really want to solve the problem, don't listen to this crap that they're telling you about how you solve the problem by getting 100,000 more troops here and there. You know, that is not, you know, people
the
are
endless
dying, you know, stupidly dying.
Yeah,
the thing is to say, why can't we have justice?
Yeah.
Why we want to support justice for everybody. We want the resources belong to the people, you know, for them to have access to it. It's their resources. And then the thing that we want is so that we can live in the human family as human beings, and not at one at the expense of another. And that's what we've seen. We haven't seen anything up you know, other than that. So you can't vouch for anything other than that in terms of saying, well, it won't work and all these silly things that people put up to, you know, to hold on to the resources.
Right.
All these silly, explanation.
Right.
You haven't had any experience with that. What you know for a fact that exists historically is when Indians were running this land, that the land was not polluted.
Exactly.
And then, you know, they didn't have this killing, and you didn't have any of this kind of stuff happening.
Exactly.
You had people understanding our existence on the planet, on Earth, and Earth was shared by everybody who lived in it. That's all you know about that. You know, and this other thing came as a result of conquest. So,
and that was very well expressed by so many nations during the Copenhagen climate change conference. They were like, imperialist countries, America, UK, you messed it up. You pay for it. Give us the resources. You have to return the resources. Reparations are owed. You messed it up.
Yeah.
That's it.
And so we're saying that their investment in the future is to help the colonized people reclaim their resources so that we stop an infant and maternal mortality rate in Sierra Leone. At this, you know, and I think it should be a shame for anybody living in any free nation that you can have this kind of infant and maternal mortality rate in a country, you know, that is this minerally rich, that we see these so-called investors sucking the blood out of the, you know, out of these countries, and a lifespan of 37 years to the people who gave civilization to the world, you know, who gave birth to the world. You know, it has to say something is wrong. And if you don't, then it is that you, not that you don't know, it's just that you have made a decision that you want to collaborate, and you cast your lot with the, you know, with the oppressors and colonizers and bloodsuckers and parasites, as opposed to casting it with the majority of the people on the planet, you know.
Yeah.
And so that there it is, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. And I think that these are frank discussions, and that's the way it needs to be, because we're intent on changing the conditions that we live in.
Well, if you're listening and we can take callers if you would like to enter into this conversation, if you have a question or a comment, if you'd like to pose a question to Gaida Cambone, we're talking with here on Solidarity Not Charity today. She is the National Secretary of the African People's Socialist Party, a veteran of the Uhuru Movement, leader of many powerful campaigns defending the rights of African people and struggling for black power in the U.S. and around the world. If you want to call in through Skype, if you're on your computer, we can take calls via Skype, and the Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, all one word. We can also take calls over the telephone. If you're in the U.S., you can phone to 727-565-1599. That's 727-565-1599. I want to remind listeners that if you do have to step away from your computer and you want to keep listening as you're driving or gardening or whatever, you can listen over the phone as well. And the phone number to listen in the U.S., well, all the phone numbers, whatever country you're in, there's local phone numbers currently available in the U.S., the U.K., and South Africa, and those are posted on the Uhuru Radio site. So no matter where you are, you can always tune in to Uhuru Radio. So feel free to call in with any question or comment that you might have. I want to let you know, and we mentioned it earlier in the show, that the African People's Solidarity Committee is having our annual national conference this upcoming weekend from Sunday through Tuesday. That's Sunday, January 10th through Tuesday, January 12th. And Gaida Cambone, who we're talking with on the program today, will be one of the speakers at that conference. It's going to be a powerful, powerful conference. If you want to get involved, and if you want to be able to be in the same room with and meet the leaders of the African Revolution today and hear what they have to say directly and be able to raise questions, have discussion, and learn how you can go back to your area and organize solidarity, join the struggle, come down to St. Pete. Sunday through Tuesday, Gaida Cambone will be speaking on the Monday morning session, January 11th. When the conference is opened, it's going to open with presentations on Sunday by Aranef Ifoma, who is another member of the Central Committee of the African People's Socialist Party, another longtime leader of the Uhuru Movement. And at 10:30, Omalia Shetela, chairman of the African Socialist International, founder of the Uhuru Movement, will be speaking. The title of his presentation is A New Day Beyond Protest to a Genuine Anti-Imperialist Movement Struggling for Power. And, of course, the chairman always you know, if you get a chance to hear him on Uhuru Radio, you know that he's going to sum up what's going on in the world today, what is happening, how we can understand the various news that we're hearing, and then the significance of what we're doing on the local level, on the national level, on the international level, how what you do can make a difference in building a future where everyone can live. In the afternoon on Monday, African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess is going to make a presentation entitled Colonialism, National Liberation, and Solidarity, and I really encourage you to come out and hear her speak. We're going to be sharing slides and photographs and a whole history of the Uhuru movement. Also on Monday, there's going to be a number of sort of theoretical presentations if you want to really get into the idea, you know, develop your own understanding of the ideology of revolutionary struggle, the science of social development. There's going to be a discussion first thing in the morning on Monday on the colonial police state and the counterinsurgency, followed by Gaida Cambone's presentation, which we're looking forward to. And then in the afternoon, we're going to get into some practical grassroots organizing methods, some trainings and workshops on how to organize in your area. And in the evening, we're having a special forum entitled The Power of the People, Why We Are Socialists. So that's going to be a really dynamic day. And then Tuesday, we're going to hear the annual reports from the various areas where the Solidarity Committee does organizing and does work, and talk about some of the practical means of organizing online and other methods of organizing. So they'll have some really important practical application. So we have about 10 more minutes. What have we not covered, Gaida? I mean, you've been all over. You have organized all over on the continent, and you've organized all over here. I remember years and years ago coming down to Florida when you were leading up a campaign to free the Cross City 4, I think it was.
Cross City 5.
I know you were involved in organizing of the party's first World Tribunal for Reparations on the for African people in the U.S. that took place up in New York. I guess I'd be interested to hear how you're seeing the transformation or how you see the changes over the years in the struggle of African people. Where do you see that we are now? I mean, we look around, we see a lot of crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you see the role of the party and the significance of the party from the early days up through into the future and the role today?
I think it's just been one long continuum of the party. One of the things that our leader, Chairman Amale Yeshitela, was able to do was to really study this and develop a real tactic and strategy for black revolution and for black liberation. And what we've seen is that we're right on point. The ASI is the place we've always understood the centrality of Africa to the struggle that we were making, that we didn't think there was and we've never understood it different in terms of, Africa not being central, and that we could get some kind of a U.S. freedom without freedom for Africans everywhere. That we understand that once we freed Africa, then we'll free not only all African people, but we'd free the world in a certain kind of way. So that I think that with this crisis, the crisis just represents really what we talked about, is that the people, the colonized people like ourselves around the world, fighting, ready to engage and really engaging, have gotten to the point where they have to engage the imperialist centers for their resources so that they can live for their very survival. And so that is the thing that's causing this great tremor, somebody's sneezing in Palestine, and, you know, so the thing is happening all around, and, people are coming together. You know, you see it happening in Venezuela. You see Chavez organizing throughout, South America. Throughout the region, various oppressed and colonized entities are saying they no longer would be the open vein for which this vampire sucks, that they're cutting off, the tentacles of the octopus, so to speak.
And I mean, so the crisis is not just a result of some faulty loan instruments?
No, it's not. It's not just the subprime. That is a part of. Those are the symptoms, But what is actually happening is that the resources, the ability to extract, is drying up.
Mm-hmm.
They've been cut off. A junkie cut off from his source.
Mm.
There's the drugs are drying up,
mm-hmm.
and so you have this frenzy. You have the shakes,
right,
you have the drug fallout that's happening, and so you have the schizophrenic thing, shivering and shaking, trying to maintain what it has and trying to expand and to get back to where you can get that free flow, and it's not happening anymore, mm-hmm. So because people are now people are engaging, they're not fearful anymore, they're engaging all over these colonies, that is occupied by these imperialist centers. So we're on point. It has to be an Africa strategy. Everybody's got one. Mm-hmm. All of the imperialists. Mm-hmm. Because the thing, somebody had asked me sometime, what difference do you see, in Sierra Leone now that you've gone back this time, as opposed to when you went right after the Civil War?
Uh-huh.
And it's a striking difference, because when I went this time, what I saw was the advent of a feeding frenzy. I saw white people, the so-called, what do they call it, investors?
Right.
They had
these
nice names for these people,
right.
As if there's some investment that the African people, is getting out of this thing. We are,
right.
We just even playing field, and, there's none of that.
Right.
What we have are parasites and bloodsuckers, that are in there, and everybody is in there. Everybody's got an Africa plan, and so we have to have an Africa plan, and this is the Africa plan. Africa is the mother lode. It began there. It began with the exploitation
mm-hmm.
of Africa, with the extraction of the people, over how many millions of people from Africa to build what we call now this new world. It was built. This is a house that black built. It began with the, the conquest of Africa, with that salt in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And so rightfully it should end, with mm-hmm. Africa, coming back together, solidifying itself and reclaiming its resources.
Mm-hmm.
So, you're looking at the Alpha and the Omega, which, so that is the question right there for, where are we? We are on point. The party is on point. The strategy works, and we haven't seen anything like it, it's tremendous that once the slave began to, develop its own strategy, began to tell its own history, that things changed tremendously. And so we're moving from our understanding and that's a powerful thing, because when you raise the question of, the significance of us being in Africa and the significance of a African workers' party, we can't even say how significant that is for the continent, because right now, all throughout the continent of Africa, what you've seen is neocolonialism. You've seen white power in black faces. You've seen so-called black leaders that were educated in these imperialist centers going back into Africa and making deals, so to speak, deals with the devil, selling out the long-term aspiration of African people for their own short-term gain. And so they are propped up as these leaders and presidents. And if anybody want to know whether a black president is the solution, they just have to look towards Africa. Because all over Africa, we have that. But what we have is white power in blackface.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that in black faces. And what we've seen something similar to that right here. It's called, Barack Hussein Obama. That's the strategy. That's the imperialist strategy. When everything else fails, when the people are showing that increasingly there have been, they're desirous of taking back their resources and are moving to do that, then they fall back on this one strategy that they have called neocolonialism,
mm-hmm.
where they have somebody looking just like the conquered people, looking just like the colonized people, put them on top of this relationship, change the complexion, and then maintain the economic relationship same as it's always been. And so that's what we have in Africa. And it doesn't work. And it's not working here. It's not going to work here either. So that's the last vestige, And the thing is, I think, again, that, the party is in the place where we need to be. And the evidence of that is the African workers now, that begin to see their interest in the ASI and saying, we have to have the ASI.
Uhuru. You know. Well, I was listening to it when you say about the party being on point and in a consistent trajectory. Well, I was just listening to the Chairman O'Malley was on a local radio program hosted by an African man who was commenting that, you know, we've been learning from you, Chairman, mm-hmm. and you know, we hope that you were wrong about Nelson Mandela being the neocolonialist, but you were right, and we all hope that you were wrong about Barack Obama, but we see now that you were right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the party's vision.
It's based in science, you know, understanding, you know, this phenomena, and it's been consistent. That's the thing about it. It doesn't respond. It's not some fly-by-night. It's something that's been cultivated for over 40 years, consistent. We're not saying anything different today than we were saying back then.
Uhuru.
You know?
You have an email from Comrade K. Fing. He says, Uhuru, Comrade Sister Gaeta is an excellent guest. She is right on the point in terms of what we have lost culturally, because you really do realize you are home when you are eating out of the same plate with your brothers and sisters, and know that that is togetherness and love mm-hmm. of your fellow human being. You are part of the people's optimism, and you know what sort of world this could be if the people controlled their own resources. Gaeta saw the healthcare system there. To sit outside and look out at the world from our porch in Sierra Leone will be with me for the remainder of my life, Kaping. So we're pretty much out of time.
Yes.
I just want to really thank you for joining us, Gaeta Cambone. We're concluding this week's episode of Solidarity Not Charity, and want to really urge our listeners to go and contribute to the Africa Fund and to come and join us at the African People's Solidarity Committee Conference this weekend.
Mm, okay. Over-